It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Welcome back to the Leading LDS Podcast. This is Kurt Frankum, once again your host, and I am really excited to share with you this episode. This is the type of episode that you need to share with every bishop you know, every Relief Society president you know, every Mormon you know, because it's such a powerful message. This topic that we discussed on this episode is around same-sex attraction, or SSA, same-gender attraction, homosexuality. However you want to categorize it, that's the topic of this podcast. And let me introduce it by telling you a personal experience in my life. When I was a young boy, I was raised with some cousins who were just my favorite to be around. And we spent many weekends and time together and grew very close. And even to this day, those cousins I consider really my best friends. And when I was in about junior high, my aunt and uncle, the parents of these favorite cousins, suddenly it was announced to me and my family that they were getting a divorce. And I was in junior high at this time, and I just thought they were happy. I didn't understand why this was happening. And my parents at that time decided not to give me too many details as to what was happening behind the scenes, which was probably smart. But a year or two later, my mom shared with me that my uncle had always dealt with same-sex attraction, and now at this time decided to leave his marriage and pursue relationships with other men. And he's a wonderful person, and I always have great respect for him. And I can't imagine the stress and dissonance he went through as he made that decision. And so as a young boy, I kind of grew, you know, and as I aged in life, I was in college, I believe, and I always was trying to reconcile what had gone on in this situation and why this particular uncle had done this and felt this way, and I just didn't understand it. And I was all over the map. I remember, you know, feeling like there's no way God made him this way. There's something wrong that he did, or something went wrong that made him this way. And I always tried to reconcile and understand it, but I could never get there. And so in college, I came across a book called In Quiet Desperation, which is authored by Ty Mansfield. And fantastic book, a book that not only helped me understand this issue of same-gender attraction, but also helped me understand deeper temptation. Though I don't personally have any inclination of a relation to same-gender attraction. But nonetheless, I have temptation in my life, and this book really helped me with that and avoid temptation that could potentially destroy me. I have heard various interviews with Ty Mansfield over the last decade or so, and always enjoyed his perspective. And so I thought with Leading LDS, I would reach out to him. And I thought it would be interesting to have him come on this podcast and sort of mentor or speak to, as if it was a group of bishops, stake presidents, church leaders, Relief Society presidents, which is what Leading LDS is, and just talk to us of what we can understand better, so that as an individual comes in the office to share with us how these identity perspectives, that we can maybe more effectively approach it. So Ty responded back to me and said, "Not only will I come on your podcast, but I will also invite three of my friends, all of which experience same-gender attraction, and all of which have been bishops in the recent years. One of them actually has been in a stake presidency. So we found a day, all gathered together in person. This is my first episode that I actually interview people in person. And so the audio isn't great. I don't have a microphone for everybody, but nonetheless, it's clear. I captured everybody's voice clearly, and it is worth a listen to. So you will hear four voices in addition to mine. The first voice you will hear is Ty Mansfield. And Ty Mansfield is a marriage and family therapist and co-founder of North Star. Now, North Star is a nonprofit organization that has a mission to provide a place of community for Latter-day Saints who experience homosexual attraction or gender identity incongruence, as well as their family, friends, and ecclesiastical leaders. The next voice you will hear is Joseph, who was released as bishop a few years ago. And then you'll hear from Monty, who's been bishop twice, and Dale, who's been bishop in the 90s, and then has recently served in a stake presidency. So it turned out to be a very interesting interview. So sit back, relax, and here is my interview with Ty, Joseph, Monty, and Dale.
This is part of my story, and I've been public for probably over 10 years now. So my story is out there, like you said, in a lot of different forums. And this, so my, you know, part of my personal experience, I was sort of aware, but I never really started dealing with it in an open way or really actively addressing it until after my mission. I think I'd been home from my mission for a couple of years, and I was a BYU student, started seeing a counselor. And so there was this process at BYU for 2 or 3 years. Some of that was very quiet. Then I finally started looking for other support, talking to other people. Because again, even when I started opening up about it with a therapist or a counselor that was recommended to me by a bishop, it was helpful, but I'd still never met anybody else. And so it was lonely. Mm-hmm. And that can be kind of discouraging. And then even when I started meeting other people, I could only find people. I had a really difficult time finding anybody who either wasn't sort of living a double life. And again, this is BYU. So it's, you know, BYU student kind of, and then sort of living on an underground, or it seemed like they were just sort of biding their time until they left, like keeping the honor code, but had intentions of pursuing somebody once they left BYU. And then I felt really lonely again, because that's not what I wanted. And I knew that wasn't what I wanted, but I started to question whether what I wanted was possible. And so that kind of informs my story quite a bit, in the sense that I did sort of not a faith crisis, but I definitely had a spiritual crisis, in the sense of like, maybe this isn't possible. Maybe everybody's right. Like, this is just not possible to do. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what you believe or what you want. And there was a time when I finally decided I was going to start dating guys to see what I could learn from that. And then, at one point saw myself on my way out of the church, and then had some spiritual experiences that really sort of brought me back in a very kind of powerful and profound way. And I felt really grounded from that point on. And then the rest of that point is just personal growth and just trying to spiritual growth, emotional growth, and then getting involved more in writing and then in ministry. But those experiences are what kind of formed influenced my approach in terms of what kinds of resources, because it's the narrative experience. Like, I wanted to meet other people. I needed to know that there were other people who were doing this. And so a lot of my passion, my heart is in kind of helping people share their stories. Hence like the book Voices of Hope. And then now we have an online website project called it's the Voices of Hope Project. And and then with North Star, some friends and I started this ministry that was intended to be, at the time, there was another ministry called Evergreen International that was geared towards faithful Latter-day Saints, but it tended to be a little bit more therapeutic in its focus. And some friends and I were wanting to something that was more kind of peer support. And so we started North Star, not as a competing organization, but just to provide peer support in a way that we didn't feel like it was being, there wasn't any place that we were finding it. So we started North Star. That's grown over the last, that was in 2006. So over the last, 7 years now?
Nine years.
So over the last 9 years, we've grown, and eventually Evergreen ended up absorbing into us last year. And then, last year we had our first, 9 years in, but last year was our first big annual conference. And this year we have, just coming up in a couple of weeks, is our second annual conference. And that's going to be a big event. We have some really, really great keynote speakers like M. Catherine Thomas, James Farrell, Mariama K. Kalin. I don't know if I'm pronouncing her last name right, but Mariama Kalin, and Chad Hymas. So some great keynotes, and then there's about 50 different breakout workshops for family, spouses, men, women. We have a track for those that experience gender dysphoria. We're kind of the transgender spectrum of experience. So we're like a huge range of resources. And I think, and it's going to be, it's just going to be an all-star show. It's a really, really great resource, and we hope that people will come.
Cool. Right on. And
and there's a track for church leaders specifically.
Oh, perfect. That's great. And what's your website again, just so we can reference that?
Northstarlds.org.
Okay. And all the info is on there for the upcoming conference and how to register and where to be and so forth.
The conference website is, it's a separate website, but it's conference.northstarlds.org.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Cool. And I'll link to that in the notes here to this episode. But Joseph, let's go over to you. You've been a bishop, right? You're now released, but tell us about your background, your story, and when you got involved with North Star.
You know, I don't remember a time that I didn't experience same-sex attraction since my earliest memories. That I joined the church when I was 14.
Oh, okay.
Went into the Marine Corps as an attempt to erase every feminine characteristic I had from my being, and just kept trying to just, I felt like I just needed to overcome this. And then I actually fell in love with a woman and thought, well, that's it. I'm cured.
You're fixed, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And, that was 30 years ago. We're still married. She's my best friend. But the SSA has been constant. Mm-hmm. And about a year ago, I stumbled on a website, called Voices of Hope. And, I'd heard that there was this guy that had written a blog, and it was called Married, Mormon, and Gay. And I stumbled on that as well. And frankly, I wept all night. I just realized that it is possible to be married and still have these feelings, and that I wasn't alone. And with that realization, I told my wife, and I reached out to North Star, and realized that there was now a support system that I never knew existed before. Mm-hmm. And the whole time I was bishop, no one ever came to me about SSA. And I wondered what I would do if they did.
Yeah. Because you want to relate, but you don't necessarily want to talk about your...
I wasn't ready to come out myself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All of my focus was on ministering to my members.
Yeah, sure.
And I wondered, what will I say? And how close will I get if they were to come forward? Mm-hmm. But I wasn't being honest with myself. And I thought that if I could hate it enough, the SSA, mm-hmm.
yeah,
that I could get rid of it. And I think in the end, and I'm finding I'm not all that uncommon. In the end, I just hated parts of myself, and I got lost in that. And many hours spent in the temple pleading for help on how I could ever reconcile something like this. I mean, in my mind, it was the greatest contradiction anyone could ever have in their life.
Yeah.
And being able to reconcile that has been what's helped me stay close and connected to not just the Lord, but the temple.
Wow.
And, that's my story. And now it's time to become more public.
Yeah.
Because I've lived a life where every time someone steps up and says, I'm gay, it means they're leaving their family.
Yeah.
And they're walking away from their covenants. And that was something I would take very personal, and it would create this disconnect within myself, knowing how I felt, but knowing that there had to be an alternative or something was seriously wrong with me. And afraid that if anyone ever found out the way I really felt, no one could ever love me.
Yeah.
I mean, my life would be over, even though I had never done anything to break my covenants. And so to be able to help in any way that I can is what my life is about now.
Well, great. I appreciate that. Monty, tell us a little about your background and how you initially got connected with North Star.
Okay. I'm have some strugglings how much I want to share.
Okay. Well, as much as you're comfortable with.
But first, I'd like to thank Ty for what he's done, the pioneering work that he's accomplished. He's made it possible for men like Joseph, myself, and Dale, who, when they're coming to grips with the SSA, and for me, it's later in my life, and it's for countless of younger men that Ty has helped, that has made it possible to know that there is an alternative to a gay lifestyle, that it's possible to be within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and keep the covenants that we've made and make those covenants, and that we can do so with assurance that we have a life ahead of us within the framework of the gospel of Jesus Christ. My experience was that, like Joseph, my whole life, I knew that I experienced same-sex attraction. I didn't know what that was until later in my life, as an older teenager, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
But had great shame around it, incredible shame. Whenever homosexuality was mentioned from the pulpit, I was just praying that nobody was looking at me, because I'm sure that I was going bright red and I was wanting to crawl under the bench. Mm-hmm. And felt that way all my life. I had been called as a bishop in 97, and when I was released, there was that conflicting shame that was I worthy to be a bishop and have SSA? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I went to my state president after I was released and felt I was confessing the greatest sin known to mankind, that I was SSA. That was my opinion.
Right.
And the first thing he asked me was, do you keep your covenants? Have you kept your covenants? And I told him I have kept my covenants. And he said, then there's nothing to worry about. Everybody has issues. And at that time, it was the first time I had a release of shame in my life, and went away from that experience, I think, happier than I had ever been.
Oh, that's great.
And it was wonderful. It was an incredible experience. And the same-sex attraction had not been forefront in my life. It had always been like, I've heard the term static on a radio, that it was in the background.
Yeah.
Which I feel was a blessing. Then I was called as bishop again, and a couple of years into my bishopric, there was a circumstance that happened that I had some questions and went to the internet and got onto a forum and found myself addicted to the forum. And one of the questions in the forum directed me to a particular site that said, the gentleman said, it's not pornographic, but for me it was.
Mm-hmm.
Because of my SSA, and found soon that I was involved with pornography. And at that point went to my wife and to my state president, and expecting to possibly lose my wife, fully expecting to be released as bishop, and to my surprise and amazement, my wife supported me wholeheartedly. She said, you were there for me when I was in trouble, and I'm there for you. The state president, I didn't tell him about the SSA. I told him about the pornography, and he wanted me to continue as bishop.
And this was a different state president?
This was a whole new state president.
Okay.
This is, I don't know, maybe 10 years after
gotcha.
The first
okay.
one. I don't know. Can't remember the time frame. And the state president asked me to continue. And I continued. And then Dale loaned me Ty's book, Voices of Hope. And in there was the story of a bishop who had the same experience as I did. And when the state president found out that what he was looking at was SSA, he was released within a week or two. And so I thought, oh, I have got to tell the state president about the SSA. So I went back again, and again he wanted me to continue to serve as bishop. So that's my story. I got to say that It was something that I like Joseph, I haven't counseled men. There's been some mothers who have that mentioned to me about their adult sons, and I helped with some regard in that way. But I, after North Star Conference last year, I was so inspired. It was such a spiritual uplift to me. I went home and we had another new stake president who had just been called.
Okay.
And I probably shocked him out of his saddle when I told him not only that I was SSA, but I wanted to be open as a bishop.
Okay.
I thought that I could best help that way. And he said he would have to visit with the elder authority or area authority. And and they came back and said it wasn't time for that yet. But someday I'm sure that can happen.
Cool. Great. Dale, tell us about your experience.
Well, like Joseph, I don't recall a time when I didn't experience it. I do remember from about 11 years old on experiencing same-sex attraction, not knowing quite what to do with it.
Yeah.
I served a mission in Korea, and upon returning home from Korea, I met my wife. She was Korean and had moved here about the year I graduated from high school. And we dated. She happened to be the only girl I'd ever dated, and we dated a little. And then she had different ideas about what she wanted to do. I was all ready to be married. I knew that's what I needed to do, is get married. And she was the only woman I'd ever been attracted to in my life to that point, and in fact, to this point. And so I asked her if on the second date, I think I talked to her about marriage. And she told me, after I graduate from college and I serve a mission, then I'll consider getting married. And so I remember having a shout out with God over that. If not her, then who? How is this ever going to work? I went back to Korea and stayed with a young man that I had baptized in his family for 7 months and taught English, and frankly was pretty much in love with that kid. Luckily, he didn't experience same-sex attraction. And although he could definitely tell that, well, he said, "You're gay," and I course denied it, but all the while I would write to my wife, and in writing to my wife every week I'd ask her, "Have you got an answer?" Or my future wife.
Right.
And every week she would say no, and that went on for 7 months. And at the end of the seventh month, it was February, actually the end of January, and she sent I got a letter from her saying that she had got her answer. And in fact, she had. Her grandma got her up every morning at 3 o'clock in the morning to pray. So she had a little more incentive to get an answer. Mm-hmm. And when she got her answer, she said, "Yes, I want to marry you. I will marry you." And I immediately booked my flight home. And that was, I got home 1st of February. We were married in July. I was 22 at the time. We were married about when I was 29 years old. I kind of had a crisis. My business had failed, and I was under a lot of stress. I now had 3 children, and I was struggling to be able to support them. And the same-sex attractions that I had pretty much ignored were coming to the front, and I was really struggling, and I was having a desire to act on those feelings. And so I told my wife and an aunt that I had that was actually living a lesbian lifestyle, happened to be the only other person I knew that experienced this. And she told me I should be true to myself. And so I asked her if she would set up a meeting with a guy that I could just go talk with. And Heavenly Father blessed me with a great spiritual blessing at that time. Actually went on this date with this guy, and I told my wife I was doing it. And
wow.
And we went to a dance recital that his little sister was at Logan High. And we walked past his whole family, and I was sitting there. And as I was sitting there, I felt uncomfortable to be there. But at the same time, I was not thinking anything particularly spiritual, but this overwhelming feeling came to me, and it said, if you continue down this road, and you can be happy, you will lose them. And I looked over, and there was my family sitting where his family was sitting, my three little children and my wife and me. And I immediately recognized that I needed to choose differently. The young man took me back to the motel where I was staying, and I didn't invite him in. And I called my wife immediately and told her that I was coming home. And so from that experience, it was still rough for a few years, but I got myself back in spiritually where I needed to be. I put myself emotionally where I needed to be, and I began to have opportunity to serve in the church. And I served as an elders quorum instructor, or an instructor in the elders quorum, and then was called as a ward missionary, and then a state mission president, and then on the high council, and then I was called as bishop in the mid-90s, and then a few years after that, called into the state presidency. And I have remained faithful to my wife all during that period of time and kept my covenants. I, like some of these other brethren that's already spoken, have had to come to a place where I could recognize that I wasn't alone, because I still felt quite alone, and kind of had a faith crisis after being released from the state presidency. And again, all the sexual feelings came so much stronger. I had pretty much put them away for a while and ignored them and served the Lord with all my heart. And at the end of that and being released, they all flooded back. I remember going on the internet with my wife, and we came across a couple of different websites. One was one called People Can Change. And that led me to, in reading it, to Evergreen, and then from Evergreen to North Star. And I signed up that very night to be on the North Star Steering Committee, having never met another person. Personally, having known Ty, having a son that had been in high school the same time as Ty, and they had sang together a couple of times. And so I had already read his book, In Quiet Desperations, and I also came to very quickly to find out that I wasn't the only person who was living their covenants, that there were many of us out there. And like Joseph, I also, when I served as bishop, I never had anyone that came to me and said that they had this issue. And I also don't know quite what I would have said at that time.
Wow.
But frankly, now I have a much better view of how bishops can bless the lives of others, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, obviously, all of these stories are in a nutshell. I mean, we could do hours of podcasts with each one of you regarding your story and what you've experienced. And but my purpose today, obviously, the context of my my website, Leading LDS, is to enhance leadership in the church. And, you know, myself serving as bishop, I've had a few interactions with people who've come and shared this with me, you know, that this was an issue for them. And just like you as bishops, even experienced the same thing, didn't know how to go about it. Me as a person who doesn't experience same gender attraction, I still didn't know how to go about it, right? And so I think it's a universal feeling, regardless of the experience you've had. And so I wanted to create just a forum today and talk about that, as far as what does the leader do? What are we doing wrong? Or what are we missing and not understanding? And so I think that'll be an engaging discussion as we move forward. So I don't know, I guess the first place to start, I'd say, is, you know, as a bishop, sometimes I don't know the right terminology to use. I think once you get involved in organizations like North Star and things, you become very comfortable with, you know, SSA, whether you're gay, homosexual, transgender, and then there's all sorts of different, you know, on the scale of all those things, you know. And so, I don't know, and whoever would like can jump in, but, you know, what do we call people? And I mentioned this prior, is that sometimes as a bishop, if you say that somebody's gay, you're indirectly condoning that lifestyle. I mean, that can be the feeling, right? And so, but maybe you're not. So, Ty, what do you think? What sort of terminology should a bishop use when somebody comes in and shares this?
If I could even just kind of break it apart a little bit.
Sure.
And this is the difficulty in terms of like the cultural conversation, because a lot of, so I wrote an article for LDS Living called What to Say and What Not to Say to someone who experiences same-sex attraction. And that's on ldsliving.com. But the only criticism, I mean, and the article was less about what is right and more about how do we relate to other human beings in a way that's respectful and compassionate and empathic and all that, and that sort of thing. And the only criticism, I mean, even like folks from conservative to liberal, the feedback was all really, really positive, except they hated the fact that I used the term same-sex attraction instead of gay or LGBT.
Right.
And a lot of it comes down to this. There's a culture of language. There's two different cultures of language in sort of our kind of contemporary dialogue around this. You have sort of a conservative religious culture of language. I mean, if you were to talk about this on just a level of qualitative experience, I'm attracted to men, or in the case of a woman, I'm attracted to the women. Mm-hmm. And that's really just describing the fact that I am attracted to another person or another kind of person. Right.
Right.
And then you get into whether or not those attractions are persistent, into what, you know, whether it's exclusively the same sex or it's exclusively the opposite sex, the degree to which that is persistent over time. Then if it's persistent over time and exclusively, then we say, you know, I'm a homosexual orientation. Right? Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, there's the identity language, and it's the language through which I, the way I incorporate my sexuality into a sense of self and into a sense of identity, and the language that I use to communicate that.
Right.
And that's sort of how usually it gets conflated. Well, right. You're attracted to the same sex. Oh, you're gay. Right. And they mean the same thing, but they really don't. And so they have to get kind of teased out so we understand exactly what we're talking about. And my understanding and what I've read from the church and, you know, with MormonsandGays.org, because they, you know, for that's a good example of them trying to walk this line of, you know, good SEO, right?
Right.
And you see them use the term, you know, Mormons and gays, and yet in the text, they move very quickly back to speaking of same-sex attraction. Mm-hmm. And sort of the culture doesn't really, the popular culture is so sort of saturated with kind of a pop cultural LGBT ideology.
Yeah.
That it's, we sort of have to work within that in a pragmatic way, even if it's not necessarily preferable to some. Because I think I identified as gay for a time, but I had a very strong spiritual experience at one point, and this is just me, this is just personal, but I had a very strong spiritual experience that if I continued to identify as gay, I would limit my progression. Hmm. And so it was a very conscious choice on my part that I would choose to no longer identify as gay. I wanted to acknowledge and, you know, really kind of authentically acknowledge what I was experiencing when I was experiencing it, and to be able to healthily work on personal growth without trying to pretend that this wasn't a real issue for me, but how I incorporated that into my sense of identity was very important. And that's what the Spirit communicated that to me in a very real way. And yet for other people, and for a time for me, identifying as gay was a really meaningful experience. Like it kind of helped me work through some of the shame and sort of facilitated some of the self-acceptance that I think I needed to get to.
Yeah.
And then it sort of outlived its purpose in my life. And then it was time for me to move beyond that. At the same. And so I think the church has, I mean, as a doctrinal standard, there is no doctrine on what language we should use to right. communicate what we feel. There's a doctrine around behavior, obviously, but not around language. And so I think the church has really tried to walk a line of, we're going to talk about this in terms of the qualitative experience, the experience of attraction to the same sex or same sex attraction, as much as folks who identify as LGBT hate that. That's just the fact, I think, mm-hmm. or the way that I understand what's happening. And And at the same time, I think the church has tried to be respectful to those who also identify as LGBT and saying, you can identify however you want, as long as you keep your covenants and are keeping the commandments. That's less important, right? So as far as the right language, just what I would suggest as a bishop is sort of kind of, or any, whether it's a bishop or any other auxiliary leader, is kind of letting them lead the way, mm-hmm. and letting them set the tone, mm-hmm. let them set the tone of the conversation and let them lead the way. And so if they're using words, if they use the word same-sex attraction, kind of reflecting that back to them.
Yeah.
What's difficult for me now is when people insist on calling me gay when I've just said that I don't identify as gay.
Yeah.
and it just feels like it feels very oppressive. I mean, the ideology is so pervasive that it feels kind of oppressive.
Yeah.
And at the same time, someone who says, I am gay, and it's offensive for me, for you to say, I struggle with same-sex attraction, as I think just as a matter of respect and courtesy, just call them gay. Like, I don't think it's a big enough of a deal to insist on using the quote unquote right language.
Yeah.
So let them set the tone, use a language, but I think a church, because I don't want to project LGBT language or gay language onto someone who doesn't identify with that.
Right.
And I think my experience is that there are some people who are very good, very faithful, very believing members of the church who identify as gay. My experience is that most of people that I've come across, and this is also sort of a generational shift in this too, but even still, most people who are active, believing, faithful choose not to identify as gay. They disidentify with that as an identity construct. Okay. And so I think that that needs to be respected as well. Whereas those who kind of insist or kind of criticize the church for not using LGBT language are in a way not really sensitive to or acknowledging that there is a huge subpopulation that doesn't identify with that and they don't want to be lumped in.
Yeah.
And that's a long answer to a short question.
No, but it's very helpful though. I mean, a lot of those things, I guess it's a balance. I was thinking between, a bishop doesn't want to project the pop culture, terminology, because then they feel like, again, they're indirectly condoning it, but they also want to respect the person if that's where they identify. And it's sort of another example. As a bishop, sometimes I feel silly using the term petting and necking, because I don't know if they use that in the 70s, but in pop culture, I mean, you don't hear that anywhere else.
Nobody
other than in a church, right?
Yeah.
And so when I say like, oh, so was there any petting and necking that happened? It's kind of like, that's so weird.
Plus, we have to kind of define what that is.
Yeah, exactly.
Before they like, understand what we mean.
And so it's almost like this Mormon terminology, and then which goes back to the same-sex attraction. Like when I use that, I feel like I'm just the standard bishop that's using the terminology, which the handbooks have. And I want to relate to that person. I want to validate what they're going through. And so sometimes by using these terms, I'm sort of building that wall, like I'm not validating you. I will not respect these feelings you're doing, when I'm not really trying to do that, So
right.
I think what you said is great. And then it's different for each person. Like you've personally had experiences that you just don't identify as gay, but somebody else may, and that's okay. Right.
And the first time that I opened up to a bishop, that's what I told him. I told him I am gay. Like, I mean, that was how I described it. And he didn't say, well, you shouldn't use that word.
Stop.
Like, I think I probably, I would not have felt understood. I would not have felt, rather than just trying to understand and empathize with my human experience, trying to getting caught up in kind of the thick of thin things, which language really is. And especially youth are not, they don't, no youth is, when they're looking for resources, youth don't Google Mormon who has an affinity for people of the same sex, right? They don't use, they're going to, or Latter-day Saint who has an affinity for the same sex.
Yeah.
It's going to be Mormons and gays.
They're going to say gay Mormon.
Yeah.
The reality is that that's the language that youth are going to. And so we have to at least use language, because, the purpose of words is to communicate ideas. And so you have to communicate with people in a way where they are, in a way that they understand. And then you can move from there into something else, mm-hmm. but you at least have to meet them in that space.
Yeah.
That was the word that I struggled with the most, because as the term gay became the popular definition for how I apparently felt, even though I was married, it created additional conflict for me, because I didn't want to identify with that term, because I had my own judgments about the people that did do that. And so when I realized that there was a definition now that would define the attraction without labeling me as who I am,
right?
That kind of started to change everything for me. Although now I love equally those who identify with being gay as or lesbian as much as whatever they want to term.
Right.
It doesn't matter anymore. Right. But at the time, it was a huge issue because it was like this battle between what I was going to refer to myself as and what that meant to the world. And would I be adopting the wrong philosophy?
Yeah.
I didn't want to be labeled.
Great.
And I found in our private conversations that we refer to myself as SSA. And when we use the term gay, it's someone that has chosen to live that lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just in our own personal conversation.
Yeah. Not that there was any committee to the side of that. It just sort of organically came out in your discussions for sure. So, well, good. That's helpful. And I think somebody else, you know, people listening maybe outside of the church context think, oh my goodness, why are you spending so much time on just the terminology? But as a bishop, I'm nervous when these conversations happen. I don't want to make any mistakes. And I remember the first instance that someone came in to share this, I just said, okay, to start things off, I get a lot of mulligans here, a lot of strikes. If you leave here angry at me, I get another chance. You have to promise me you'll come back and give me another chance because I could really screw this up, you know, because you're just so nervous.
Before we leave that topic, the other term that we probably ought to address is one that we all consider to be, the term homosexual.
Uh-huh.
And that has a label and a judgment as well that we often tend to use now as someone who is living the lifestyle, because there are others who identify with gay who keep their covenants.
Right.
And so there's a fine line there. But to say that someone is homosexual is another label.
Yeah.
Even though it is, well, he has the degree in sexual dysphoria here. So I don't want to go too far here, Ty. But that's another social complicated layer there if we're talking about terms. SSA, SGA, gay, and homosexual.
And for me, the term homosexual is far worse than any of the others.
Yes, yes.
And always has been.
For you, why? Why
would you say that? Because when I grew up, a homosexual was a sinner.
Yes, yes.
So a lot of it's the language. And you see that in the professional culture too. Mm-hmm. Like you know, even in the APA, they don't talk about homosexuals and heterosexuals. They talk about heterosexuals and lesbians, gays, and bisexuals.
Okay.
Right. And so there's sort of because of the baggage that terms come from and they're kind of the historical context of them, they carry a sort of baggage. And some people feel, I think that's why some of the resistance to same-sex attraction is it's used in conservative religious circles and by reparative therapists and like all of this stuff that has negative energy.
Yeah.
And so that is a lot of the LGBT movement. None of this is universal. There's a lot of nuance and you'll hear different people use and express different opinions about different words. And some they'll eschew homosexual in one context and embrace in another. And so a lot of it is contextual with these things, but his historical context, you know, with the DSM, which is sort of the psychiatric manual through which you diagnose mental illness.
Okay.
The idea was homosexuality was the mental disorder.
That was the diagnosis, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The diagnosis.
Like bipolar, you're not bipolar, you're homosexual, right?
Yeah. Okay. And that's, and you know, again, that was removed from the DSM back in the 70s. But prior to that, again, the word carries the baggage of mental illness, which is why a lot of people, mental illness in some contexts, and then just like absolute sinner in others, right? If you're talking about religious contexts. So that's a word that sort of even has fallen out of vogue. You don't hear a lot of people use that often.
Sorry to bring that up. And that's almost like one whole podcast right there.
Right. You're right. Yeah. But I think, you know, we live in such at least in this country, a very politically correct world. You're almost afraid to call something a wrong thing because then all this connotation comes with it. Right. Well, cool. Now let's maybe peel another layer off this onion here and talk about as a bishop or a priesthood leader or maybe a Relief Society president. I don't want to, you know, limit as far as where these conversations happen, but part of it goes back, I think, to the pop culture where this when somebody is dealing with the issue of SSA, it has now in this world, almost at least in my opinion, kind of felt like it's its own type of sin, its own type of temptation, right? And I can't say because I'm attracted to women and that I have a desire to, you know, I have the same temptations with women outside of my marriage that we almost sometimes just feeling I can't relate my sin to your sin because yours is completely on its own island type thing. Am I making sense? Like there's almost this this feeling that this is a temptation like none other. And so you can't relate it to any other. And as you have discussions with that, it's hard to, do we treat this as this is just a temptation you're dealing with, or is it more than that? Any thoughts, Gum?
I think labeling it as a temptation is wrong.
Okay.
I guess it depends what we refer to as it.
Right? Yeah. And what is it to label?
And same-sex attraction is not a temptation. Just like being heterosexual is not a temptation. It's your sexual preference or orientation.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do with that and the way that you function within that orientation, if it's going beyond proper bounds, then that's the temptation of where to take it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the same thing as what Monty just said, and that is that it doesn't matter whether you're heterosexual or you're homosexual. That your orientation is as a homosexual or same-sex attracted is towards members of the same sex, as the opposite is members of the opposite sex. But God has given commandments, and He has told us that we're to keep it within the bounds that He has set.
Mm-hmm.
And so Satan's going to be trying to do all he can to persuade us to go beyond those bounds.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that for me, that attraction is towards members of the same sex. And so he's going to be tempting me again and again to try and break my covenants by jumping over that line that has been set by God. And that becomes the temptation. The actual being oriented towards members of my same sex is not a temptation, nor is it a sin. And the feelings that come with that is not a sin. Only when we listen to the temptations, jump over that line and act on them, that's when we're in trouble.
Yeah, and I think sometimes a leader is hesitant to want to say, this is who you are, and I'm okay with that, right? Because again, we're somehow feeling we're indirectly condoning this type of lifestyle by saying that. But in reality, like you said, just like it's not a temptation as is just an orientation of one person is heterosexual, another person is homosexual. And so I think that's helpful for bishops and others to hear that it's okay. I think we'd agree it's okay for a bishop to say this is who you are and that's okay.
Right? Yeah, these are feelings you're having, and there's nothing wrong with the fact that you're having those feelings.
Yeah.
If you choose to act on those feelings going against the commandments that God has set, then there's some problems with that.
Yeah. And this branches out to maybe another broader issue that a lot of bishops struggle with is when someone comes into your office, it is now your role to figure out what it is, like you said, Monty, and then fix it. We're here to fix it, right? Mm-hmm. And so let's identify first what it is, how we're going to tag it, what we're going to call it, and then we're going to fix it, right? And I think you can get in trouble with that because sometimes you can't fix it. You know, there's no easy fix. And so then you get caught up in this, well, you're doing something wrong. If we didn't, I haven't fixed it yet. You still are attracted to the same, the same sex, you know? So interesting thought. Any thoughts on that?
I think bishops get in trouble when they're there to fix it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
We need to, I think your approach when you told that person that, hey, give me another chance, promise, you were being open and honest and loving them for who they were and acknowledging who you were, that you weren't perfect, you didn't have the answers, and that's how it's got to be approached. We Perfect. Don't know the questions, let alone the answers.
Perfect.
And I would just add one piece to that, too. And I think this can help in sort of normalizing the experience that people are going through. Because, again, sort of we talk to, and, you know, sort of, and you have, like, the spectrum of ideology and belief around this, and you will have people who will say that if you condone or affirm or say it's okay, you're condoning homosexual lust, right? And that's another thing that's really important to distinguish, is that lust is a sin regardless of the object of the lust.
Yes.
It is always a sin, whether I'm lusting after the same sex or lusting after the opposite sex.
Yeah.
Lust is a sin. And the Savior was very clear about that. And so there's the attraction, which is just, it is. And I think one thing that can also be helpful is normalizing it away. Like, I don't know, I've never met a person, at least where we've had this conversation, who was married, who was attracted to the opposite sex, who stopped being attracted to the opposite sex because they happened to make a covenant with one person of the opposite sex.
And you see that with many that the bishops deal with, for the pornography addiction. They say, Bishop, I just got to get married. And then all this other outside temptation will go away, right? But that attraction continues. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. And so there's sort of this attraction is attraction. And we're always going to find ourselves attracted to people outside of the person we've entered into a covenant with, whether that's the same sex or opposite sex.
Yeah.
And that's just part of being human. It's then you have that there's the temptation piece, and then whether it's tempted to lust, and I can lust in fantasy as much as I can lust through pornography.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have a friend, he's like, I don't even need pornography. I've got a mind and a
terabytes in my head, right?
Right. You know, and that's his vice. He's just like, I don't have to look at pornography. It's just hard enough managing what's in my head. And so that sort of, there's the temptation to lust or to violate laws of purity, whether that be again through thought or through cyber activity or behavior with another person. And that's sort of that line that's really important, because again, the attraction isn't the temptation, and the temptation isn't the lust or the behavior or the sin or whatever it is.
Yeah. Perfect. Good. Well, let's kind of move on to understanding kind of the range of issues you may see. And maybe if you'll quickly give us a background on what you're working on dissertation right now. I don't think there's any need to bring more credibility to your voice in this realm, but maybe tell us about that and then kind of open the discussion about understanding the ranges of issues like a bishop may encounter with working with people.
So a lot of my, obviously my personal experience and most of the ministry that I've done and the stuff that I've written on is with same-sex attraction. A few years ago, there was a blogger who identified as, back then, again, the DSM term was gender identity disorder. That's changed.
Okay.
Or the transgender spectrum of experience. And so we wanted to include, it's sort of the T in the LGBT, right?
Uh-huh.
And we wanted to include faithful approaches for that as well. And so he came on and formed some resources there. And kind of over the years, we've watched people who have pursued North Star who don't experience same-sex. Well, whether or not they experience same-sex attraction, they also experience gender dysphoria, or what's now called gender dysphoria, used to be called gender identity disorder, or identify as transgender, whatever term. Again, some people reject the disorder. Again, it's sort of where there's beliefs. But it's that idea of, that kind of the transgender spectrum of experience of disidentification, identifying with another gender or the opposite gender, and disidentification with the sex of my body. And so my dissertation, there's not a lot of great resources out there. Even in the professional literature, there's sort of an acknowledgement that the only a minority are actually going to transition, whether that be socially or surgically. The bulk of the body of literature is on the process of transition for those who transition.
Okay.
There's very little out there in terms of really helpful literature for those who are choosing not to transition and how do they cope with that and kind of getting to a healthy place in that. So for my dissertation, I decided to look at my doctorate's in marriage and family therapy. So there has to be a relational variable.
Okay.
So my dissertation is actually looking at LDS couples where one partner experiences gender dysphoria and how they manage that in the relationship.
Wow. Okay.
And you know, it's a qualitative sample, so a qualitative study, so the sample is fairly small. So I've interviewed 15 couples for whom that's the experience. And again, it's a very different, and most of the people that I've interviewed, out of the 15 couples, only two identify as bisexual and everyone else identifies as heterosexual, according to their biological sex. So there you like same-sex attraction is not even part of the equation. It's all gender identity stuff. And so, and a lot of them, you know, they, of course, part of the difficulty that a lot of them experience is they talk to bishops, or they'll go into a bishop and the bishop thinks they're telling him that they're gay, right? Because they don't, you know, they don't know how to distinguish, you know, sexual orientation and gender identity are very different, you know, but.
Yeah, and I would say maybe the bishop sometimes makes the opposite decision. If someone comes in and says they're gay, and some bishops think, oh, do you have this transgender thing too? Is it all one big group, you know, that you also want to?
Well, even in the church, even historically, any statement that's made historically about gender identity or gender confusion, often they'll call it gender confusion. They're talking about it in the context of homosexuality, as if homosexuality or same-sex attraction is about confusion about gender, which for the vast majority of people, it's not.
Right.
I've never wanted to be the opposite sex. I've never been confused about my sex or confused about gender. And even in one talk by general authority, the only place where it's ever said that there is no mixed matching of bodies and spirits, it was in the context of addressing homosexuality, not gender identity.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Because that's sort of how there was sort of this kind of like, this is a gender thing. Like something's wrong with people in terms of that kind of confusion. But that's sort of, but with folks who come in and struggling with that and figuring out how do I reconcile it and what does this mean? And either wanting help or, you know, one individual, you know, sometimes the coping in that regard is sometimes they're dressing privately or they're choosing to do hormone replacement therapy and you know, they're taking opposite sex hormones, and there's no policies around that. There's
church policies. Right?
There's no church policies around what do you do if one of your congregants comes in and tells you they've been dressing as a female? I mean, there's a policy around whether you do that at the Halloween party. I think. I don't know if that's just my ward. I think that's church-wide. We have a sign. You can dress it. You can't wear masks and you can't dress as the opposite sex for our Halloween party. And so like, the handbook is very slim in terms of what it addresses. And it's all around sex reassignment surgery.
Yeah.
But most of those that are even those that transition, there's a large percentage of those that are only transitioning socially, not surgically.
Okay.
So what does a bishop do with that?
Right.
Right. And these are, and I just had a conversation with a stake president a couple of weeks ago, and he had a situation in his stake up in Portland, and he had called Salt Lake and they're like, we don't have anything. Good luck. Tell us how it goes. Right. And it was,
why we have prayer. Good luck. Right.
And I mean, the reason I bring this up, I don't know, you brought it up, but I think one of the reasons that it may be helpful even to address this even as a tangent briefly is that with the cultural shifts that are happening now, I mean, Time Magazine came out with an issue last year called The Transgender Tipping Point. And now we have shows like Transparent, and then there's a TLC show that's coming out soon. And there's more and more that's addressing the transgender issues. And they're not as uncommon as we think that they might be. And more people are going to start, who are struggling with this, are going to start opening up to church leaders. It's not going to ever be as common as dealing with SSA, but it's going to become more common than it probably now is.
Interesting.
Not necessarily in terms of how people are dealing with it or how many people are dealing with it, but certainly in the ways that they're dealing with it and the openness about it and the openness about seeking support resources.
Yeah. So, and is it safe to say then that, these issues of transgender identity, whatever you want to call it, is in the same spectrum as we're talking about same-sex attraction? Or I didn't even know if we wanted to go here, because was that a whole separate podcast?
That's a whole separate podcast.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Because there's really clear when we're talking about same-sex attraction or sexual behavior or sexual orientation, like it's the handbook is very clear about what's appropriate in terms of behavioral boundaries.
Right.
Right. Marriage is between man and woman. That's whether someone feels like they can get married now or not. I mean, there's a lot of people that are going to come there. I mean, when I first, again, sort of recommitted to the church after that kind of phase of dating guys, I really believed that I would never marry in this life.
Yeah.
And I sort of needed the freedom to be in that space with God and to work that out with God. And so sometimes the church leader is just going to have to, okay, how do we minister to you? How do we help you and bless you in this space. Yeah. Without recognizing that marriage as part of the plan of exaltation is going to be in everybody's eventual future, if someone's not there right now, how do we, you know, we acknowledge that, and the doctrine is very clear around that. Policies are very clear about homosexual behavior. But in terms of gender identity, there's a lot of it. There's a lot more ambiguity. So I think there's a lot more to be said, both in terms of the number of people that experience same-sex attraction and the clarity of church doctrines and policies.
Yeah, and I think in a, speaking from policy, it's important for leaders to know there's just a lot of nuance. There's just like your state president friend in Portland where they just said good luck. You know, mainly that's where you just default to support. And I, the Cultural Hall, another LDS podcast, did an interesting interview with a transgender woman or trans, I don't know what you call it, but a man who is identifying as a woman and but is still holding a recommend. And that bishop has said, you know, as long as you come here, we'll support you. And there's no, you know, you can, and again, it define what you define as acting out, right? There's no inappropriate relations with, you know, another man or things like that, but still dresses and goes by female identity and things, which I'll link to. It's worth listening. And so, but it made me think as I listened to that, what usually as a bishop, I just want to be the bishop when there isn't a clear answer, just love and support that person to find a place for them in the church. Right. And if there's no direct policy of saying, take their temple recommend away or a discipline here and there, then just love and assume that some more inspiration will come down the road. Right.
Yeah.
And if I may, I think that's the beauty of North Star. That's the resource that North Star represents as a community of men and women who are not alone now, that are attempting to find support, rely on each other, learn together, and keep our covenants. Because even though we're married, these three bishops here and Ty, our platform is not, and you should be married too.
Right,
that is not our approach.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of us wondered if, like Ty said, if we would ever get married because of the feelings that we had, but it happened. And it did, and it was wonderful, and it's great. And some of these young men that are identifying right now with SSA and are coming out, they look to us and wonder if that will happen to them. And we don't know. We really don't know. But the beauty in that support, in watching some of them actually get married when that happens, is a beautiful community. And that's why this community is beautiful that way.
And they're able to approach marriage when that comes in a much healthier way than, you know, someone 30 years ago whose bishop told them, well, if you just get married, it'll go away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And kind of using marriage as a
fix,
right? As a fix, yeah. Rather than loving a person and entering into covenant with a person, it's employing a fix.
Cool. Great. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. And maybe I'll introduce this by, and we can come back to some of these or if Ty, if you have another area you want to delve into, but let's talk about mainly in the realm of those individuals who've chosen to live a homosexual lifestyle and pursue that, pursue a relationship. I know there is I think there's actually two couples, but one in particular I'm thinking of in my ward that I know that it's two men living in a homosexual relationship in my ward. One's a returned missionary. You know, we have their records and, it's almost like, we're both wild animals where we're just scared of each other. Right. And we don't know it. I feel like they don't want me to knock on their door and I don't expect them to knock on my door anytime soon as their bishop. But I've also thought, man, I wish they knew that they're welcome here. Like they can show up, they can come here on Sundays. You know, we've all got stuff that we're dealing with and many that are, you know, actively pursuing, you know, transgression in their own form that still come here on Sundays. And so any thoughts on just how a leader can more effectively fellowship those that are actively pursuing this type of lifestyle?
I have a son he's my oldest son. He's lived the homosexual lifestyle since he graduated from BYU about a year after graduation. He made a choice that he was just too lonely and was going to live that lifestyle. At the beginning, that was really rough on our family, on myself and on my wife. And there was a lot of shame in it for me because here I was also experiencing this and not knowing how to help him make different choices. But we came to a place where we finally recognized that it wasn't our job to judge him anymore. Our job was to love him and accept him. And he had a partner that he was with for several years, and they were considering getting married. He lives in New York, and they would. We had to overcome how we were going to even have him in the family, let alone if he was to attend church. And we finally came to a place where we loved them both. We accepted them both. They were welcome at everything. They're in our family portrait that we took. And we've learned that simply by loving him, all of the animosity, the worry about whether or not what he's doing is right or wrong is gone, and we don't have to worry about that piece. That falls to the Savior. And so my hope would be that although he hasn't chosen to go back to church, and even although now at this point he's by himself, he's not living with anyone at the present, that if he comes to a place where that's his decision and desire to go back to church, that the ward and the bishop would be welcoming to him, to accept him where he is, at the place where he is, and fellowship him until, if and when he decides that he wants to repent of the things that he's done that was wrong and come back into full fellowship and obtain a temple recommend. And sometimes that transition period might be years. It might be many, many years. But if they would be open to him, where he could come and participate in doing the things that anyone who is a non-member could do and feel of being able to serve in whatever those capacities might be, that would be a great blessing. But I also know that that is a rough place, just as it was for our family, to come to grips with that, that that could be the same thing for the members in a ward. And so a bishop in welcoming them back would also need to do a lot of work with his ward council in helping to prepare that if they're going to come, so that they feel welcome. And then he also might need to meet and discuss with some of the other members who have some hardship or heartbreak or whatever biases they may have grown up with. And so I look at it from a more personal stance. Yeah. He's not in a place where he's willing to go do that yet. He has a lot of anger towards the church and some of the leaders and the way that they treated him. But that day, our hope is that day will come and that he will be accepted. And even if he is with a partner, and even if he's been married, that he can come and feel and partake of what we have to offer at the level that he's worthy to, and that the members would support and rally around him, not in condoning any sinful behavior, but in receiving them as Christ would, as a sinner, just as he did the woman who came in and bathed his feet with the tears, mm-hmm. and washed his feet and anointed his head with oil.
Yeah, great.
You know, I've got a story that may help clarify that. Someone challenged me in my journey as it began to tell my best friend about my attractions and what I've dealt with all my life, who happened to be my very first missionary companion. Yeah. And he has remained my best friend and the kind of friend that every man wishes they had in life. And I just happened to be that fortunate. And after I told him about what my journey now looks like, he immediately went out and bought a copy of Voices of Hope, the book, and couldn't put it down. He's texting me quotes from this book saying, this is answering questions I've always had, but I never knew there were any resources for priesthood leaders. And he is a counselor in his stake presidency. And now he's gone out and bought five more copies for his kids and one for his wife and one for the stake president. And I said, you know, what would you do now if you were bishop again? How would you approach this in leading a ward council? He said, I'd buy every one of them a book. And we'd talk about one chapter at a time every month. And I would help them understand that this challenge is no different than any other challenge all of us face. And I would help them reframe the way they think about this problem in the church. And we're talking about a book here. This book isn't written by Ty. It's compiled by Ty. But I mean, we have chapters dealing with overcoming challenges in life from Robert L. Millett and Wendy Ulrich and M. Catherine Thomas, Brad Wilcox, Camille Franck Olson. These are incredible sections here that they've commented on as it relates to same gender attraction. And it's like, I realized that when I told my bishop and my high priest group leader, they didn't know about this book. Huh. And now I feel like I'm like promoting my own book here. My own book of the month club. I'm really kissing up since Ty's sitting right here.
Right. You could be in volume two.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's great. That's cool. I'll definitely link to that and make sure people and leaders know where to get it and where to buy multiple copies, it sounds like. So,
and another great book is Tim Timmerman wrote a book called A Bigger World Yet and addresses that issue specifically.
Is he an LDS author?
He's not LDS, okay. But he's Christian.
Okay.
He has a strong belief in Christ. And his message in the book is that as Christians, we came up short. We eschewed the gay community. And we had a chance, but because we weren't true disciples in the way we dealt with people, that they chose a different way. And I think from that message, if we don't love those who have same-sex attraction or are living a gay lifestyle, they'll go to whoever does love them.
Yeah.
I think it's incumbent upon us to set aside biases and love everybody as Christ
would. Yeah. Thankfully that's a commandment to love everyone. Right.
And one piece, if I could add, is that, with both of those comments, with Dale talking about his sons and the anger that he feels, there are a lot of people who feel they have been legitimately hurt by the church or by individuals in the church. And historically we have not handled this always very well. And we've grown a ton. And we've gotten better and we're going to continue to improve. And the fact is that historically we haven't always dealt with this well. And there are a lot of people who have been hurt. And I think part of welcoming people back into the church is whether or not they attend church or before, whether it's when or before they even choose to come back to church, is I think an important part of that healing is validating the hurt and some, in some sense, the anger that they feel. When someone was told as a 19-year-old that if they just got married, it would go away. And now they're in the aftermath of this, we've got a spouse who has been hurt and children who have been hurt. And I mean, granted, in those days, nobody really knew very much about this, you know, and even the professional discussion has changed dramatically over time. And so there is a lot of forgiveness, I think, that needs to be. I mean, I think for those that have been wounded, I mean, one of the great lessons that they can learn is the power of forgiveness.
Yeah.
And that if they're going to make it back and be reconciled, they're going to have to learn one of, you know, the power, this, the importance and the power of what can happen when we learn to forgive. But acknowledging and even sort of owning, I think, if an individual church leader or priesthood leader or auxiliary leader is not personally responsible for what's been said in the past, whether it was a mean thing. Someone even just recently said, he wrote an essay for Voices of Hope. And the first time he opened up to a church leader, I can't remember if it was a stake presidency member or someone, but the comment was, I find your kind despicable. And this person had some wounding experiences in the past. So they're bringing in some of their kind of past history stuff. And that was a really painful experience. And this same church leader later came and apologized profusely for what he had said. But But all of us sort of, I mean, part of mortality is kind of this exercise in forgiveness and grace, in learning. I mean, when Jesus talked about forgiveness, he didn't condition forgiveness more than he ever conditioned forgiveness on repentance. He conditioned forgiveness on our capacity to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, but acknowledging that when someone comes in and they're sitting there and they've been hurt, or this couple who doesn't want to come to church and they feel angry, or a son, or whatever it is, whatever the case is, maybe. And some people just, maybe their grievances are not legitimate, but there are some for whom they are. And just really hearing and acknowledging that, saying, we want you with us, whether you're with, bring your partner, whether you're in a relationship or not in a relationship, bring your partner, don't bring your partner, but come be with us. And I think maybe this is speaks to me and my own immaturity in some ways, but I very rarely want to be in places where I'm only welcome. I want to be in places where I'm wanted and needed.
Great point.
Yeah. And I think the more we can say, the less we say to people, well, the doors aren't locked, you know?
Yeah.
And the more we say, we want you here, not just you're welcome here, but we want you to be here with us. I think the more we'll start to see people come back, and we need to communicate that.
Yeah.
And how do we do that proactively? And so this, for example, this couple in your ward, even to reach out and say, you may not feel comfortable coming to church, and I can totally understand if you don't. And I want you to know that I want you there. And if there's ever a time where you would desire to come back, I would love to have you there, and I will do everything within my power to help nurture a culture within the ward where you can feel comfortable. That's not affirming a relationship. That's right. Not affirming sin. It's not changing doctrine. It's not doing anything. It's saying, we want you to be with us.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that every ward can do. And I think, and until we do that, until we can love better than anybody else, a friend of mine said that those who love win. Those who love the most will win the hearts and souls of people. So we have to, and kind of asking if we, even looking at why do people leave? What are they looking for that we can't give them? If someone just insists that I'm lonely and I want to be in the same sex relationship, maybe that's not all that we can do. That's not what we can do. But I had a therapist who said that he worked with a man who said once that, it's easier to get sex in a park than to get a really good hug in church, you know? And wow. Sometimes we're not as loving, or the brother. I mean, if we had a brotherhood and elders quorum that met the average elders quorum that met the vision of what I think Joseph Smith wanted quorums to be,
right,
we would have a lot more people sticking around.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And so, I mean, and that's us. We have to change. The church has to change in that way and be the kind of culture and the kind of society and the kind of community where people want to be, rather than where they feel like, well, I'm commanded to be here, so I might as well, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Well, and one more thing, and that is once it's open to them and they do start to come, then the Spirit is what's going to work on them and help bring them where they need to go, because they're going to be in an environment where they're going to fill of the Spirit. And that can be a hard process for them, but it will progressively help them come to where God wants them to be.
Yeah.
And that may or may not be what I or someone else in the ward thinks that's where they need to be. We need to let the Spirit work on them in the way that it can to progressively make them better and bring them to Christ. And in that process of that happening, if you've got ward members who are making negative comments, or a bishop or a high councilman who gets up and preaches against homosexuality in a way that is condemning and destructive, those kinds of things affect people. And not just the people that are coming back, but those who are already experiencing this that no one knows who they are. So all of those things have to come together when you are ready to open your arms to everyone to come back to church.
And I guess it starts with the first step, right? If you are defined, your title is the leader in that ward, it's important for you to act as a leader and extend that invitation. And one dynamic you kind of brought up, but never thought about, is that, some of these people may be hurt. It's not that They just have no, they don't like the flavor of Mormonism, or, you know, they just don't like church, but they may actually want to be here, and but they're hurt and they don't know how to get over that hurt without a leader reaching out and saying, you know what, I'm sorry what's happened. I don't know what has happened, but let's hit the reset button and see what we can figure out and find a place for you here.
There was a guy in one of the essays in Voices of Hope was by a gentleman, and I don't think he ever went inactive, but he had a lot of hurt, things that had been said, some of the culture that led him to, that he, you know, felt quite was sort of facilitated self-hate, shame and self-hate and kind of the perfectionism and that kind of thing. And he said at one point he kind of checked out spiritually. He was married, was attending church with his family, and continued. And I'm trying to remember what he wrote, because we're friends, and so I'm trying to remember what he wrote in the article as opposed to what he told me separately. But one of the things that he said is he started looking into Eastern spirituality.
And Eastern spirituality, okay.
And there's a Buddhist monk named Thich Nhat Hanh, and he said that before he's, you know, and he's kind of looking at this and kind of, again, checked out of Mormonism, and I don't know if he ever stopped believing. I just know that he never stopped going. But Thich Nhat Hanh said, before you will ever find true peace, you have to go back to the traditions that you came from and look for the gold there, or something like that.
Hmm.
Like, you have to reconcile yourself. Before you can ever leave with peace, you have to go back and reconcile yourself to it. And so that sort of began, this Buddhist monk sort of ignited the spiritual journey going back and trying to make peace again with Mormon theology and the gospel in terms of like this, the spirit and the principles of it, and facilitated a journey of reconversion. And again, never really stopped going. And again, this is not someone who is, again, certainly was not ever acting out with men or was never in a relationship with a man and never even stopped going to church and never broke his covenants, but had felt so wounded that sort of fed some resentments and some checking out, certainly spiritually. But that idea of needing to reconcile ourselves to the good and to see the beauty before we can ever really move on with peace.
Hmm.
Awesome. And I think when you really understand the gospel, like, how would you not how would you not want that? You
know? Yeah.
But it's a lot of it's just not understanding it.
That's great.
When that comment reminded me of one that my wife has said to me, and it's very wise. Until we can love somebody for who they are, they won't give themselves permission to change.
Yeah, great. Well, this has been a fantastic discussion. Any points we haven't hit, Ty, that, or anybody else that is worth mentioning or thoughts? Or
One of the things that we had as we were kind of debriefing before that we had talked about that we haven't talked about here, I think, was with issues of just differences in gender and how the needs of men may vary. The needs of, I mean, you have the needs of someone who is single as opposed to somebody who's married.
Yeah.
The needs of men and needs of women may vary. And because the hierarchy, especially, you know, the leadership of the church is so overwhelmingly male. I've heard this both from men who have been hurt by men and from women who have been hurt by men who have authority issues will, because of that hurt, have a really difficult time working with a priesthood leader. And sometimes it's in the case of a woman I've met with several, I've talked to several women who have had trust issues with men and have for that reason, they've had a really difficult, either they've chosen not to seek support from local church leadership, or at least the, you know, priesthood leadership.
Right.
Or they've had a really, really difficult time. And the only reason they did was because, you know, you have to by virtue of confession or something. And so I think a really valuable conversation that we can have is how can a local church leadership, specifically priesthood leadership, engage the auxiliaries to help in that ministry? Mm-hmm. We received an email from a woman who was wanting to know, it was a Relief Society president, who wanted to know how she could help this woman who was unwilling to go see the bishop, again, because of she'd been abused and she had severe trust issues with men. How can a ward effectively, a ward collectively, because this is our collective responsibility, not just the bishop's responsibility.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So how does a bishop or even a ward council sort of collectively minister in a way that can address some of these nuances that may leave people feeling some distrust towards church leadership or at least male leadership?
Yeah. So, and what would you say, are there certain like characteristics between those contexts you described, between a marriage, someone who's in a marriage as opposed to a single person, as opposed to a female that, you know, that's that identifies as lesbian, those types of things? Or
yeah, I don't know. I think it's, I mean, I've obviously never been, I'm the one person in this room who's never been in your shoes, but what would that look like? How can a bishop or a ward council say, okay, there's this person who's struggling, and I understand, you know, I'm trying not to be scary, but I understand that for reasons that may not even be my fault, this person is distrusting of me by virtue of being male, by virtue of being in a leadership position. How can we now as a ward council, or how can I maybe delegate some of that ministry?
Yeah.
I don't know what's appropriate.
Right.
And in an official capacity. I mean, we can all minister in unofficial capacities, but is there a way that in an official capacity, a bishop can delegate some things to some auxiliaries?
Yeah. And exactly. I was just going to talk that for a minute. A bishop has one role that he can't delegate, and that is as being a judge in Israel. But if you have a woman, even or a man or whoever, who has trust issues or authority issues, and that individual has transgressions that needs to be confessed, there's nothing that says that if they've come to another member of the ward, a Relief Society president, or even a sister or another brother in the ward, that that individual cannot come in with that person to help give them the help and the strength that they need. But in all other things, at least all others that I can think of, the bishop has the ability, even with giving of temple recommends, to assign his counselors, or in any other ministering capacity, he can assign or request that someone else in the ward help with those, other leadership in the ward, or even an individual in the ward, call them in and ask for them to help with that person. So I think the only one really that he's pretty much on his own shoulders is as a judge in Israel.
Yeah.
But the ministry of the women to other women, to sisters for other sisters, we were continually amazed at the strength of the Relief Society presidency and the network of visiting teaching that was often equal to or much more superior to the home teaching program. And so the bishops have access to credible inspiration through that mantle to assign the right sisters to minister to someone in that situation. And then one day it may change to be something more. But I love what you say, Dale, in that it doesn't have to be all alone or nothing.
I can give a good example. In our ward, there's a couple who's not very active. They're older, but they have a gay son who was living the gay lifestyle, but now is not, and was wanting to come back. But the father had gave the son $5,000 to go have his name changed because he did not want this young man to carry the same last name that he had because he was gay. And
this is a story in your ward?
In my ward. Wow. And so I don't know all the details, but what I do know is the bishop assigned one person to work with the father, another person to work with the mother, and a separate person to work with the son. And now the new bishop is now working with this new son and this family. And I just find it, I see it as a great blessing in the lives of that family. First, to help the father understand that this is not a sin simply because he he is homosexual. Second, to make the son feel welcome to attend, even though he's still got areas that he probably needs to work through repentance-wise. And then a mother who's trying to navigate these other things within her home. So that, I think that's a pretty good example of something that where the bishop could make specific assignments to members or leaders in the ward to help with those things.
And from a bishop's standpoint, it's so relieving to hear that, because there are moments as a leader when you feel incredibly alone, that this is all on your shoulders to figure out, even outside the context of this discussion where, all right, Bishop, it's up to you. You got to make the call here. You know, you're just like, oh my goodness, I could be completely wrong. You know, then it's all on me, you know? And so by giving yourself permission to delegate some of this fellowship, is it goes a long way, you know, and then it's not on your, on one person. So for sure. Well, good. Anything else, Ty, we're missing? I think this has been good. I mean, we've been going about 90 minutes here.
There's nothing specifically that's, I don't probably think of 100 things after we
right,
read, but,
yeah.
But there's nothing specifically other than just, at the bottom of this, you could probably include a lot of, because the church has a lot of resources on this that's available, and we could just include that on the website, right?
And starting with MormonsEngage.org and going from there, right?
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Just after I told my wife, which was conference weekend last year, April, we went to the North Star Conference, which I had found online. And we were scared to death. I don't remember ever being more frightened at anything. And I've been through Marine Corps boot camp.
Then going to the North Star Conference?
Yeah. What would we find there? What if somebody sees us? I mean, the fears were just out of control. And it was an experience like no other. It was like coming home, wasn't it? Oh my gosh. It was like a family reunion with 300 people I didn't even know I was related to.
But you actually like the people.
unlike a family reunion. Sorry, I forget you guys have a lot of family. I don't even have any cousins, but no, it was such a faith promoting experience where we found the Spirit so strong we didn't want to go home after 2 days.
Yeah.
It was a life changing experience that put us firmly footed on a journey that has impacted our relationship as a marriage like nothing else we've ever experienced. And I couldn't be more grateful.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm sure there's many out there listening, you know, that are scared to go to something like this, because, you know, they don't know what to expect. And not that the point of this conversation is to reach out to, you know, bishops or state presidents that experience same gender attraction, but I'm sure there are some out there that it's nice to hear that there's been other bishops that have been there, and maybe this will be an opportunity for them to come and learn and be better leaders.
And as much as we'd want them to be at the conference, which is in 2 weeks, the beauty as well is that this year we're recording. Are we not, Ty?
All of it will be recorded audio. Some will be recorded video, but all of it will be recorded audio.
Which represents a huge resource cache for bishops who need to get caught up on what's
great.
Happening.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That's great. Well, good. All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. This has been fantastic, and I'm always open to a part two or three or four if we need to. But, man, this has been – I appreciate the free consulting to me, but I promise I'll put this out there and have others help. So thank cut you. It off there.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you.
What a blessing it was to be involved in this discussion. Again, I thank those that participated, and man, I was so fortunate to have this panel in front of me that I could fire questions at, you know, a lot of these questions that I've always wanted to ask, but never really knew who to ask them to. And so this was a great resource and a great podcast, and I hope you found it just as helpful. I'm sure I missed some questions. I'm sure you have questions that you would have asked differently or in addition to the ones I did. And obviously we went about 90 minutes, so it was time well spent, but there's so much to talk about to discuss around this topic. And so if you have a question, please send it to me through the contact form, email it to me, leave it as a comment on this post. I'll make sure I pass those on to Ty and those others, and that we can get you a resource, or at least point you towards, or get you an answer, or point you towards resources that may get you that answer. After listening to this episode, you know, the one thing I just ask of you is that maybe you pass it to another bishop, another Relief Society president, somebody else in your stake that would benefit from this. Let's get these resources out there, this information to others that is going to benefit from it, just like you're benefiting from it. And that's my goal. I just want to reach as many leaders as possible so that we can enhance the overall leadership in the church. And that's my goal. And I think we, working together, we can really have an impact on not just making us better leaders. That's not necessarily the point, but you think about the millions of individuals, maybe not millions yet, but thousands of individuals who are hesitant to see a bishop. But if it's a bishop that is now more approachable because something he's learned here, or now knows how to approach an issue more effectively, then that's our goal. And we're saving lives. We're reaching out to individuals who sincerely have a desire to go to their bishop but are afraid. But once they discover the capacity of leadership they have, they'll do it. So until next time, be a leader and not a calling.